This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 647, brought to you by Harry's. To get your trial shave set, go to Harry's.com/ifanboy right now. That is Harry's.com/ifanboy. And of course, iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week number 647. I am Josh Flanagan. Hold on, let me check my notes here. My co-host is, come on. Oh my god, I remember you. It's Kara Kilpatrick.
I am relaxed.
Sure you are. Oh, you've come back.
That was the least relaxing vacation I've ever been on, but no one cares about that.
At the turn of the tide.
Yeah.
We are iFanboy, and every week they say, Legolas, get them up! We read our stack of comics. Haven't done that in a while.
Yeah.
Out loud. In my head all the time. We read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. It's usually Batman by Tom King. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick. Some people write it in an email, what's with you and Tom King? And then we have to be like, it's not a thing. And then we say that rhymes with King. Oh, I taught.
Wow.
There's going to be listener mail. There wasn't last week. I ran out of time. The idea is that it's fun. It usually is fun. We'll see if Connor can still do this. I'm clearly losing it. we will spoil the comics that we are going to talk about. If you haven't read them, that's your own problem. It's a review show. That's how it works. Connor, please talk for a little while.
Well, first of all, I was listening to the shows I missed, and I just want to mention that the shows were fun, as always, but man, neither you nor James Viscardi knew the date of Superman's first appearance, and that I was yelling at my computer while I was listening to it.
37?
38.
38? So then Batman was 39.
Yes.
Listen, I know a lot of history from that time period.
It's a pretty major deal.
Yeah, well, true, but I know a lot of other history that's actually more significant from that period that I think I've been committing more memory space to. So, fair enough.
All right. So, the pick of the week was Batman 53. And I didn't want to. You know?
I understand.
We've been here before. The previous issue was the pick of the week. The one before that would have been mine. This is it was a three-issue arc called Cold Days, 12 Angry Batman, as we've been calling it. And there were other good books this week, and there was a couple that could have been the pick of the week. But I read Batman 53 last. It's written by Tom King, art by the incredible Lee Weeks, Elizabeth Breitweiser colors. The problem is, much in the way that when Grant Morrison was doing Batman and Robin in the very beginning,
those first three issues,
no one else is working on this level right now.
Mm-hmm.
Between Miracle Man and Batman, and it hasn't been the whole run of Batman. We talked about this on the show. It took a while, I think, for Tom King to figure out what he was doing with the book, find his tone. Originally, he had told me he wanted to be basically his version of the animated series, and I think he started off that way and quickly changed direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not, no one else is doing this right now. No one, it just feels like no one else is putting in this amount of consideration into their books. And I've said that before, and I don't mean to denigrate other comics, and I know how hard it is to make them and churn them out every 2 weeks, but it's a different level right now that he's on.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, let's, maybe that Gotham Girl,
yeah,
arc wasn't the best.
No.
And we can recognize that now. It wasn't bad, but in comparison to this, it's you know, we had to get through that to get to this. But we're doing a thing now that
Between this and Mr. Miracle, there's a reason why he just won the Eisner for Best Writer.
Sure.
He's on a different plane at the moment, and it won't last forever. And someone else will take over. But for right now, I mean, I finished Batman 53, and I was like, well, shit.
Someday, like 5 years from now, we're gonna open up like Avengers number one by Tom King, and we're gonna be like, enough with the fucking grid, dude.
Yeah, well, that's true. So here we have the finale of the story in which Bruce Wayne has been sitting on a jury that is on a case against Mr. Freeze that Batman was heavily involved in, and a lot of people have been joking and or complaining that Bruce would never be on the jury, and we find out here that he bribed his way on, so that's how he
I really like that bit at the end. That changed everything.
Yeah.
In terms of sort of the motivation that was going on and why it was happening. And
it wasn't random chance.
Right, no, yeah, totally.
It was that he felt bad that in the grief of his busted-up marriage, he went too hard on Mr. Freeze, who was, in fact, innocent this one time. And it's always an interesting dichotomy that's often played in cop movies or TV shows or whatever. It's like, okay, you know the criminal's guilty of a lot of things, but this one time, for this one crime, they aren't, so what do you do? And here he clearly has decided to go into the jury room and get Mr. Freeze off because mm-hmm. he didn't do this one. It's been interesting. This was a very psychological issue. At first, I wasn't quite sure about it. The main thrust of the discussion in the jury room is Batman some sort of god? Is he infallible? Do the people of Gotham see him as a deity? And should he be seen that way? And that's the main discussion thrust of this issue. Meanwhile, Lee Weeks gets to draw basically every major Batman villain. And I couldn't have been happier with that. I hope he doesn't disappear again after this arc.
I mean, he's not going to keep up the 2 week pace. I don't think he'll disappear, but I think he'll be back on something.
Well, I know he's. I mean, like, I know Tony Daniel's coming up on another people. Another they're basically
Tony Daniel, a name who I probably used to be like, ugh. but I think the last one he did on this, I was like, There's other guys like that I've noticed.
I want you to do the rest of the show and only react to things with noises. I don't want you to get.
Can I say other things besides? Can I start with that? Like, as we get to a book, I'll make the noise that fits that book.
Sure.
Okay, great.
Okay, so I just really loved the discussion. I know a lot of people found it odd, Bruce's discussion of religion and God, especially since he pals around with lower deities and new gods and things, but that's just comics. It's always been that way. It is silly when you think about it, but again, all of it is silly when you think about it. And then, of course, for me, I'm sure everyone is predicting this, is that at the end, he goes home after the trial's over and he tells Alfred, I don't want to wear the new suit anymore. That suit reminds me of Selena. Give me the old suit. And so he's in the classic year one costume with the little bat on the chest and the trunks and the old belt. I know it's not going to last forever, but for however long it lasts, I'm pretty happy.
Well, that is one of those things where I'm not saying he was talking to us directly. I don't think he was.
No, I don't think so either.
I do think that there was like, I was like, oh, this is for me. Not me, but the collective me.
The abstract me.
Like, it was for you and I. We were like, okay, that's right. You know what we're thinking. You get it. And just, I think right now, you could stop Batman right there. Okay, just freeze.
Look at that final page, man. I need to remember who I am with Batman standing in like an alley with steam behind him and the classic suit Lee Weeks drawing, a very shadow heavy. I mean, that's Batman right there, man.
Yeah.
Not this dumbass suit. I mean, I even don't mind the new one that Capullo designed, even though no one can seem to decide how it's actually drawn.
Yeah.
In Justice League this week, Javier Fernandez, who was incredible, drew it with the giant knee pads from the old suit, and it just looked terrible. And anyway,
the subtext here of I need to remember who I am, and putting that suit on and having a guy like Lee Weeks draw it, you know, with a minimum of line. Actually,
very Mazzucchelli-esque.
Yeah, I mean, it really, like, there's all sorts of things that he's talking to there, basically.
There was a lot of Mazzucchelli, actually, in this issue, because he talks about, you know, how he had to leave Gotham to find himself after the murder, and there's a lot of direct referencing of year one in that flashback, and it's kind of drawn even a little bit like Mazzucchelli.
You're absolutely right. I think it's really easy to look at this on a surface level and be like, this is ridiculous. He wouldn't go in there. He wouldn't wear that salmon shirt. He wouldn't lecture to these people.
Well, the salmon shirts might be a bridge too far.
I mean, if there's anything that's going to push me over the edge of this is bullshit, it's that. But I'm going to tamp it down for right now. And anyway, like, if you're looking at it on that surface level, yep, it's silly. But the second that you get away from that and you think, well, what's the goal here? What are we trying to say? And I don't even know if you could say that the author knows literally what it is he's trying to say, but he's getting at something. He's poking at something. He's scratching around it. The idea where he's saying, you know, do you believe in God? Batman's a God. That's all heavy-handed stuff. And it barely works.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If I can be honest. I was like, this is for me a bit of a stretch. I see where you're going, and I like the attempt. It's one of those, it really is one of those, like, it's the Tom King version of Swinging for the Fences that we used to talk about with Grant Morrison.
Yeah, but it's the psychological swing for the fences. But also, I feel like that is part of the story. It's Bruce sort of scratching around trying to figure stuff out.
Absolutely.
About himself, because he is completely unmoored emotionally since Catwoman bailed on him.
But you can also then take that, apply it, you like zoom out, apply it. Okay, well, does that apply to Batman as a property? Yep. Does that apply to comic books as a property? Yep. Okay, what about superheroes? Okay. What about geek culture as a whole? I hate that phrase, but it's the quickest way to get where I wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, all of it applies.
Yeah.
The messaging here. And it's like, you know, it's kind of punk rock at the end of the day.
I think this book is kind of that way because it's a very anti-Batman Batman book. And I don't mean against Batman. I mean it's very psychological.
And I will say it again that I don't understand why this is successful in today's market. I really don't. It flies against the face of everything that I thought I believed.
I don't know why anything's successful in this market.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think in that case it fits in perfectly.
I think Lee Weeks should do a Scarecrow story because that is a terrifying Scarecrow.
Yeah. I think Lee Weeks should do whatever Lee Weeks wants to do. And if it's another Tom King book, but I would like it to be a regular lengthy run where he can go at it for a bit.
Yeah, do it monthly. I mean, there is significant pages in here that I could have pulled out for a Best of the Week of panel segment we used to do on the website. I mean, the panel of him swinging through the Gotham full-page shot of that is terrific. All of these little panels of the villains is terrific.
I'm not saying to put the salmon shirt on the list necessarily. but I hate it.
What's really bad is that if you look at page 14 on your digital readers with the salmon shirt, I didn't even realize that the pants didn't match the jacket. Mm. I mean, that's...
Also, just to let you know, I know this has been a little bit of a Lee Weeks love fest. Yeah. That hand ain't the right size.
You've mentioned that last time. He might have small hand thing sometimes.
He might have a small... I'm very sensitive to small hands now.
Batman 53. This is a terrific little short arc. And we should mention also, it's sort of going unmentioned, is that this is a three-issue arc. How often do you get that these days? Usually everything's for the trade. So I think that's fun. I mean, this could I have read three more issues? Sure. Did it need more? Probably not.
No, I think, you're absolutely right.
Oh, I would have read
especially
three more.
With what it turned into. It wasn't like a courtroom drama. Yeah. It wasn't him arguing with the people in the jury. You know, it didn't turn out to be those things. Maybe that's another thing that's kind of interesting about it, is that it zigged on us a couple of times.
I would have been fine with another issue devoted to figuring out how the guy with the mohawk got onto the jury.
Well, they were down to him and another frozen German guy, and they decided that would probably...
Are you Albert Einstein? This was terrific. This arc was terrific. Every issue. I may be on a little Tom King high. While I was on vacation, I read A Once Crowded Sky, his novel, which was very raw and early Tom King. Well, I think it was one of the first things he wrote. But it's there. It's clearly there. Even some of the stuff about religion and discussions of that is in there a little bit. But yeah, I mean, he's thinking about stuff differently than everyone else is right now, and that makes him stand out. When you're reading 16 books a week, yeah, for sure. And he's pairing himself with really terrific artists. And that is a recipe for success. And for Picks of the Week.
It turns out that this generation of comic book writers who grew up listening to intelligent comic book shows seem to be able to pick correct artists for projects.
Good job. And I don't know who's coming up next because I don't pay attention to that stuff. But I'm excited to see where we go. I know you talked about with Catwoman number 2 how we don't want to linger too on the fallout of the wedding. But unfortunately, that's what they're doing. So we have to live with that. And I like the way it's being handled here.
Sure.
It's very similar to after Jason Todd was murdered. For that next year, he was very violent. He was overly violent, and that's what led to Tim Drake. Anyway, we can talk about that for an hour. I could anyway. Honestly, Josh, I would have hated to do it to you, but Extermination number 1, real close to Pick of the Week.
So the backstory that he's the tone of his I guess I can't give you a rating, but I would if I had to, I'd be like, I was looking down the list that Connor sent me as I do, and I was like, what's Extermination 1? And so I just thought it was some random number 1 that came up that I didn't notice or whatever, and I just clicked, X-Men, and I literally just looked at the screen and went, fuck you. And I don't know why, like I just did. But I was thinking of trying to read it this morning, but I didn't make it. So go on.
It's written by Ed Brisson. Art by Pepe Larraz, whose name is super fun to say, and I've seen him before in other places, I can't remember where, but he's really good. And this is the latest X event. The next big X-Men epic starts here, according to the cover. And basically,
they haven't used this title before.
I don't know. This is basically what's being written in the back matter is the final chapter of the young, time-displaced X-Men. They're all on the cover. And so, as they have announced the return of Uncanny X-Men, as they are reshuffling all the X-Books again with the acquisition of Fox by Disney, I think they're sort of cleaning the slate to start over. And one of the things they're doing, apparently, is good. I guess they're going to, in some way or fashion, get rid of the original young X-Men who've been running around for years now since Bendis brought them in All New X-Men many years ago, which we really enjoyed. So this is basically your big chapter 1 in which a shadowy hooded figure is attacking the mutants, and he attacks young Iceman, and he kills the vampire version of Storm, which I'm not quite clear on that, but didn't really matter. He kidnaps Iceman, the young Iceman, and then he kills Cable. They're all being attacked. They don't know what's going on, and the big reveal, as we gave you the spoiler warning, the big reveal is the hooded figure is, in fact, young Cable, who thinks that the X-Men need to go, the time-displaced X-Men need to go for some reason. It had a great sense of suspense and action and, like, you know, in the best way that these characters are under siege and they don't know what to do or who's doing it, and they have no way of figuring it out. Cerebro's not helping. And then the art was really terrific. I don't know where I've seen Pepe Le Raz before. I definitely have, but really, really good. Really great action, kind of a Carlos Pacheco vibe to his art. Mm-hmm. The X-Men, it's a cliche to say, is a family story, but you've got Cable, who is the son of Jean, and Jean is involved, and the old Cable dies, and...
Wait, is Cable... So is Cyclops supposed to be Cable's father?
Yes.
That's just... It's just... And it's original Scott Summers and Jean Grey. I don't know if Ron still listens to this show, but he's scratching his eyes out.
Yeah, and the thing is, well, I didn't know that for sure. I'm not like a hardcore X-Men fan. I've been reading them my entire life, but but at one point when old Cable's dead, Jean Grey walks in and says, "My son," so I assume that's what it is.
I feel like they dug themselves into a corner there they didn't want to.
They're all dug into a corner.
Yeah.
Rachel Summers is involved. It's all these characters who are some way, you know, involved familially or not. I think clearly at the end of this story, the young X-Men are going to be somehow either sent back in time. And they eventually had to go back in time because there would be no present without them going back. It's just super fun, and it looked great. It just had that big action feel to it that you want to get from your big event story, even if no event is big anymore. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting how at some point events stopped feeling important?
Well, it's because there was so many of them.
Yeah, it's just fascinating.
And it's constant, and it was the idea of like, well, what if we try to make it feel like this all the time so that people will buy more books? And amazingly, that backfires. This is like, okay, I'm sorry that this is coming out, but here we go. This is like The Gap. The Gap has had everything on sale for 40 to 50% off for about 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And so none of the prices matter. Nothing is interesting. Nothing makes me go, oh, I better hurry and get that while it's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I like pants. I mean, let's be honest. This is what we get. But either like get the emails. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But at a certain point, that kind of marketing just numbs you. And I don't understand. I don't understand why people always do it. They always need that short-term fix.
They gotta make their quarter.
But the long-term view is that they're not going to make that quarter eventually. Like, they're going to use that up, and then they've got nothing.
I know. That's the inherent problem with public companies.
Yeah. I mean, but they've got nothing but to actually just – what if they just did their jobs really well? What if they looked at it and went, you know, what if we make this really good instead? Well, that would be really hard. Yes. So make it really, you know what I mean? Like it just so much energy goes into that as opposed to, but the market rewards what the market rewards, I guess. But I feel like that is, you're right though. It's fizzling. I don't think
anything is being rewarded right now. Anyway, if you're an X-Men fan, X-Termination #1 was incredibly fun. This is probably going to be the story that cleans the slate for Uncanny X-Men's reboot. We'll probably have a sense of where the X-Men are at the end of all this. I enjoyed this very much.
Let me ask you this. Where are you with X-Men? I feel like you've been poking around it for a little while, trying to get in and get a hold on.
Yeah, I mean, I like the characters. I've always read them. You know, we came of age during the Jim Lee period. So, you know, when we were 12 and 13, that was the hottest thing out there. So I've been reading them since then. And I want them to be good. I tried all the reboot, the colored reboot books, blue and gold and red, and I dropped off all of them eventually. I want to read a good X-Men book for sure. I like the characters. But if it's not good, I also won't read it. I feel no compulsion to read it.
Okay. So I happened to start reading Infinity Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
What is it?
I don't know. I was like, is this an event? And so I there was like a prelude I read. It's been like weekly. I read the first, and I saw it was Jerry Duggan. And I was like, that's kind of interesting. And I... That's what it is. And it was kind of basically, and it's almost like it's a huge Marvel event that no one knows about or is talking about or doesn't seem to matter. Or
is it
like,
an event?
I don't know, but like if I tell you the story, it's that like they're gathering up everybody who has the stones and trying to get them together so they can come up with sort of a
like the metaphorical stones, like. Do you have the stones to go do this thing, or like actual stones?
The metaphorical stones.
They're gathering up all the tough people.
Which are literal in this sense, but also yes, they have metaphorical stones as well.
I see.
So everybody who's a stone holder, you know, they're trying, like all the big wigs, Tony Stark and Doctor Strange, and they're trying to gather all the stones up and keep them safe from Thanos, which is what we've seen a million times. But sure. Given the fact that, you know, Thanos and the movie and all that stuff, you would think this would be like a fear itself kind of thing, you know, like a full line wide push. And it turns out that, like, I don't know what book this happened in, but Gamora has one of the stones and Peter Quill has one of the stones. And I can't remember. There's a villain, Turk, who's like a lesser kingpin henchman. And he's like being difficult as they're trying to come to an agreement, but he has the Soul Stone and or the Mind Stone, whatever it is.
We were reading a book. It was Jerry Duggan's Guardians of the Galaxy that had the giant stone that they were hiding from people. So this must be a continuation from Jerry Duggan's.
I think it's possible, but either way, you can jump in from that and go to. But like all the Avengers are in it. It's Groot and Rocket and Captain Marvel and, you know, Captain America, everybody, all the Avengers, and, you know, this big fight. And you know, Thanos, and basically Thanos is dead in this, but Gamora is sort of taking his place, and the idea looks like she's being controlled by Thanos, but then there's Loki comes in, like it's a big, like, Avengers.
So it's basically all the characters from the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's pretty good. It's Mike Diodato, who is one of those artists who I didn't always love, but I kind of have to say, you know, like, he's got something. He's good for this kind of thing.
Sure.
For sure.
We've accidentally stumbled upon a theme for this show. And it really is fascinating to see where we are now in comics, because this should theoretically have been a big deal.
Which is why I read it. And then I haven't, you know, granted, I'm not super plugged into the community, but like, it seems like it should be a big deal.
Yes, yes.
And it's been fun. It's big, crazy Infinity Stone war stuff, and there's like the one villain who has it and he's a wrench, and everybody's kind of arguing with each other and fighting together at the same time, and the stakes are really high, and fucking Groot talks now. I don't know why that is, but it's stupid. Put that on the list, by the way.
Talking
under
Groot.
No circumstances should Groot say anything but I am Groot ever. That should be an unbreakable rule,
right? That's true.
Groot says I am Groot. I'm Groot. Put that on the list. Update the list. That's an official.
Yes, I agree.
That's official. That's ratified.
Unless it's the very last thing he ever says.
No, absolutely not. Think about you writing that page. He's about to die, and he's like, it was the
Rosebud.
Slam. Yeah, but no, he has to say, I am Groot.
Only if
and
he
then
says
everybody
Rosebud.
Around him has to be like, yep. Yep.
No, he should never say Groot. Anything that he's, that's, yeah.
Pretty good. It's pretty good. It's like two issues into the main series, and then there's one sort of prelude before it, but I picked it up without a problem. It's not like it's a new story.
Oh boy. All right, well, Batgirl 25 was one of these random DC exercise anniversary issues that they've been doing, because I guess 25 issues is an anniversary. I guess it would be if it was biweekly. Anyway, great creators on this. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 stories close to pick of the week as well, except for, I mean, look, everyone has their things. Like, everyone has a thing that annoys them that other people aren't annoyed by. And this one had a really dumb joke in it that I get is meant to be a dumb joke, I guess, but also it was so out of character that I literally grumbled about it in my head for about 5 minutes. Like, I had to put the book down and come back to it. So this is Batgirl's 25 issue. The first story, really nice story, Marguerite Scott and Tom Derenick. And Batgirl goes to a funeral for a man she once saved. It was the man who the Joker killed in that issue with when he goes to the chapel, when he's angry about not being invited to the wedding. That issue of Batman. She had saved him a year before, so she goes to his funeral. And there's a flashback to what happened to the two of them. And she has a nice talk with his mother. And at the end of the story, the mother says, basically, you know, life is short. You should find someone who you like to be around, and if you need to have a cry, go have a cry. Whoever makes you feel safe. And so then so at the end of the story, she calls up Dick, and that cuts to the next story, which is by Marguerite Bennett and Dan Panosian, who's terrific. And it's a story of Dick and Barbara hanging out in the hotel room that Bruce and Selina were going to use for their honeymoon. A little weird, but they figure, hey, the room's already paid for.
That's a little weird. I mean, you said that, but I'm going to go ahead. And, yeah.
So the joke here that really bugged me was they're talking about weddings. Like, Dick's a hopeless romantic. Barbara's a cynic. he doesn't understand why she doesn't want to get married, or at least have a, you know, like a wedding if she does get married. And she says the thing that many people say is that, you know, I don't want to waste a ton of money on a wedding when I could use that money for a down payment on a house. And he says, basically, a down payment on a house, we're millennials, we're going to be renting our coffins. And I was like, you're Bruce Wayne's son.
So the whole time, right up until the point that you said they decided to use the hotel room because it was already paid for, I was already like, you know, you're really, really, really wealthy. I mean, you can act like you're not. You can do the common people pulp song thing.
Yeah.
You're extraordinarily wealthy, Dick Grayson. Batman has no heirs but you.
And Damian.
And, you know, yeah, but what if we just ignore the fact that Damian's a thing?
I would love to.
But even if, like, there's enough.
Yeah.
It's not even a, like, I you know, even Barbara to a certain extent, I can't imagine that Bruce Wayne
would take care of Barbara for sure.
Or isn't just doing it anyway.
Right. And so I was like, man, that's really, I mean, I get if he's making a dumb joke, but, like, it's really a misreading of the characters if that's, if you're just going for the easy millennial or poor joke.
And also, he was born in 1940.
Well, that's the thing in his solo book, they're portraying him, which I love, as like the grumpiest old young man, which I love.
Yeah.
You take away that
panel. Where do you find those in the comic world?
Take away that panel, and this was a great little story in which, you know, they end up cuddling in bed because Dick is her safe place. And
let's put this out there for a discussion question.
Uh-huh.
Is Dick Grayson wealthy?
Yeah. I mean, we know that because... Well, he's wealthy because
he doesn't have a fucking job.
Bruce gives him tons of money, but like in his solo books, Bruce is always buying him apartments or, you know, whatever. You know,
it's Bruce,
like,
cop for a while.
Yeah, but Bruce was not. That's because he wanted to be a cop. He was still.
Do you ever think back to the golden age of Bat Family books?
Yes, I do all the time.
Ugh. Every once in a while, I see Adam Beach and like will post something on Facebook and he'll be like, "Come back," so, and then before him, and then I'll see something about Chuck Dixon. I'll be like, "Don't come back," but also, good job when you were here.
I'd be happy if you did. So anyway, that's a sweet story where they sort of, they aren't a thing, but they aren't not a thing. They are kind of their soulmates, but whether or not that means they'll be together is another question, but it was a nice moment. The third story, Marguerite Scott, this is Paul Pelletier and art. This one ties into, I guess, the main book where she's on a case. There's a guy who she had previously incarcerated, gets out, and he kills people pretty horribly, and he does so here, and they have a chase and a fight, and it continues directly into the next issue of Batgirl. So this is where the story's going. I believe she's leaving the tech hub of Burnside to return to Gotham proper, which I'm pretty happy about because I was sick of the tech stories. And then Paul Dini wraps it up with a story from Emanuela Lupacino. Just a fun Paul Dini, wacky Paul Dini story of Batgirl fighting Mad Hatter's female assistant. And it was nice. It was a nice issue. If you take out that joke, it might have been pick of the week. But... It was enough to derail it. It was enough to derail it.
Remember the great run of Paul Dini on Detective?
Yeah.
I'm going to do this a lot. It's mostly just to make sure I'm working out my memory.
Yeah, I get it.
You know how people make that joke? It's like a hacky comedian joke about, like, you know, when you're old, you just walk into a room and you forget what you were doing. I was like, 40 times a day, I do that. And it's awful.
So what is the sound effect for Tony Stark Iron Man number 3? Wow, that was a lot of sound effects.
It vexes me.
Uh-huh.
I'm still reading it, but this was the one where I was the most like, you need to stop reading this. Because, and I was very proud of how I described it to Jim, that he seems, Dan Slott's sense of humor reminds me of a young person who hangs out with old people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not clever. It's not funny. It's super obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But underlying that is a really strong sense of comic book drama.
He's very good at that.
And structure and plot.
Mm-hmm.
But the words and the presentation really grates at me sometimes.
The words coming out of people's mouths.
Specifically. Like, the dialogue is terrible. But it's not terrible, like... In the greater context of comics, in the 80s, this would have been the greatest thing you'd ever read. Pre-86.
He has a throwback sensibility, and humor is subjective, and you have a very strong sense of things. If humor doesn't work for you, you can't, you're not, you know, you don't go, sure. You can't work with it.
Well, I just find it unsophisticated, largely, and also unsubtle. And you're right. I'm very specific about what I think works as humor. But then at the same time, the same could be applied. There is a socio-political undertone going on here with this, like, robot right. You're still reading this, I assume.
Yeah.
So the machine man robot writes, you know, you've got machine man who I used to love as a character. I don't know what the fuck this is. Whatever. He's a stand-in. He's flexible. I'm not offended by that in any way. But, like, he's a super radical, like, robot rights person, and he's talking about, like, AI appropriation and everything. And so what it feels like is that Slott is commenting on some issues that we have going on sociopolitically today, and it's super ham-fisted.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it feels – by doing that, I don't think he's doing this on purpose, but I feel like he is making light of it.
Yeah, for sure.
It feels a little wrong.
No, it's totally right.
And a bad place to be doing that. Now – does it fit with the story as it is? And if there was nothing else going on, could we have a joke about it? Sure, but in the context of the greater world, I was like, maybe don't do this part.
Yeah, I like that part. That's my favorite part of it. I mean, if anyone needs to be lampooned right now, it's people on social media. It's fine. I don't find anything spectacular about it. I don't find anything terrible about it.
I think there's things that are really interesting about it. I like whatever the thing is, that there's a bit where Tony says, you know, like, actually, I'm not a human, you know, or, you know, whatever it is. That
yeah, that was interesting.
Super interesting. Like, it's really thoughtful. So, again, from a plotting point, I thought that worked great. And then she's doing this thing where she's kind of melancholy and she dreams of herself being a human and she wants to be and going back and forth. And that's actually fairly sophisticated and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing vexes me. I'm quite vexed.
Yeah, I think
it's also gorgeous. I really think Valeria Sheedy here is doing great work. I think it's a beautiful book.
I love that they have committed to the mustache here, but he's got it nowhere else in any of the other books.
That's fine. Take what you can get.
I also like the bits.
I'm sorry, I'm almost done.
Yeah.
The bits with, like, his mom, where she's supposed to be like an aging punk rocker.
Yeah,
it was so hokey.
I hate that part.
Yes. Like, it'd be one thing if, like, the guy had a crush on her and they had a relationship, but this is done like a fanboy fantasy of somebody who's never met a girl before.
Well, that is literally what we said about Spider-Man, which is why we stopped reading it. He was in some relationship that felt so, you know, unbelievable that I just was like, this is like someone who's never met a girl before.
It was like Kevin Smith characters dating girls.
And I don't mean that about Dan Slott. The way it's been written, it's just like, I don't buy it. It's a tough book because I do think you're right. I think there are some interesting things in here.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long I'll last.
I'm trying. I kind of like the challenge of it. Like, trying to decide, do I hate this or do I kind of like it? And there's something compelling about that.
I really liked what he did in Fantastic Four last week.
Mm-hmm.
So
I had the same thought about that, though. It's just his style. I can't get to it.
Let's take a moment to really thank Harry's, because I think without Harry's, we'd all look like hobos, right?
I'm telling you right now, just before you started to talk about this, just before I glanced my eyes down to look at what was next in the script, I scratched a little bit here on my neck because I haven't had time to get to it, and we'd be a lot less comfortable.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you'd have a lot fewer confusion about whether or not we will occasionally grab a bindle and ride the trains.
I got to brush up on the code.
Yeah, I mean, I find that happens a lot less in my life since I've been using Harry's blades. Fewer people ask me if I'm okay.
I have to check the brand rules and see what it says about hoboism. But we're good.
And the reason why that is because Harry stands behind the quality of their blades. They know that switching razors isn't an easy decision. And so they've created a trial offer, and you can claim yours by going to harrys.com/ifanboy. And Harry's, as we said for years, we've been using it for years. It's a terrific blade. It offers a close, comfortable shave at a fair price. Harry's founders were fed up with overpriced razors, overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They know a great shave comes down to one thing, and one thing only: great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. And that's why they bought the factory. That's why they bought it, Josh. And that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for the past 95 years. So you know it's a German factory. And by selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand. Just $2 a blade compared to $4 or more. And quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days and you'll get a full refund, which is crazy. So here's the trial offer you can get. You get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave: a weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover, which I just used for 2 weeks. So here's what you do. Listeners of the show can redeem that trial set by going to harrys.com/ifanboy. And make sure you go to harrys.com/ifanboy to redeem the offer. And if you can do that, please let them know that we sent you. It really does help support the show. So thank you, Harry's. Thank you, everyone who redeems that offer. Many of you do.
Yeah, I just like them. I'm a fan.
What's really funny is that you and I both put Usagi Yojimbo the Hidden number 5 on the list.
It was hidden.
It was hidden. I've never read any Usagi Yojimbo before. And I had a realization while reading this issue. And we'll talk about the big reveal in a second. I like the tone. It's really relaxing.
Yes.
It's almost like reading meditation. He has it's a very slow, and I don't mean boring, but it's like they sit around, they're drinking tea, talking about the case. I felt very relaxed reading it, which is not often the case.
I think it's a very, very good observation.
If you were reading it in a hammock, you'd fall asleep. But usually when you say a comic would make you fall asleep, it's a bad thing. But I think this would be a good thing.
I literally did fall asleep reading comics last night. I don't remember which one it was, but I hadn't gotten this far. This was the one I read at 1 a.m. after I woke up. I was like, you're not done yet.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that because there really is, I was going to say thoughtfulness. I don't know that that's the right word, but there's like a, it isn't all samurai action. There's bits of it that happen, but there's, you know, Usagi is sort of a traveler through this world always. And all of these feel about the same. And I don't mean that in a bad way. He's on his own. He's a ronin. He's like a wandering samurai. He doesn't have people. It's funny because this starts off and there's a kid, like a little kid running at him and wakes him up. I was like, does he have a family I don't know about? And it's just because he's a house guest.
Right. I thought about it too, yeah.
So he's always sort of watching and he's not perfect. Like there's just like a little, like you think of samurai in one way. You think of samurai, I'm sorry, I won't go on this forever. But of samurai in this way that it's like confident, all-knowing, gruff person. Mm-hmm. And Usagi has this like openness. Like there's a bit where he finds a hidden note in his pocket that the thief put there.
Yeah.
And like Usagi Yojimbo has this like little vulnerability. He's like, what? How'd that get there? Like, and it's not incredulousness. He's just like, well, isn't that interesting? You know? And that's what you're talking about. It's that calmness, that whatever it is when you sit on a lake in the morning and you look at it.
I think that's exactly, this feels like that comic book version of that. And even then, that putting that aside, I think this has been a really interesting story. It's been the confluence of religions, mm-hmm. You know, as Christianity is starting to spread its way into feudal Japan, that's been the main thrust of the story. And we find out the item they've all been searching for this whole time appears to be a Japanese version of the Christian Bible.
Which, if you know, you know, sort of history and like that is significant.
Yeah.
You know, that's the Reformation, basically. You know, that people can, you know, read the word on their own. They don't need somebody to translate it for them or do whatever. That's pretty like it's a high stakes, low stakes story all at the same time, and there's a really interesting sort of political thing that's happening. You know, like in our culture and then also this culture here. This is the bit where everybody who has to walk into the whatever the government compound is has to stomp on the cross.
Yeah.
And Usagi gets there and he looks down at it and he's like, I don't really want to do this, but I gotta get a move on.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting choice that they sort of like we let him see his thought that I'm not comfortable doing this, but also it's not such a big deal to me. I got to go do some shit.
Yeah, it's a really good miniseries.
Yep, it is. And it doesn't feel like anything else. I mean, it feels like Usagi, but that's what it should be.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this was a patron thing is why we had to read the first one, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've read it before, but I think you had
Yeah, but it started reading. Me. Yeah, sort of. I'd go on and off, but it kicked me back on it. And so I've been enjoying this. I have a little, when I see that it's on the list, I go, oh.
Well, I'm glad that was a patron pick because I wouldn't have read it otherwise. Yeah. Real quickly, Archie meets Batman 66 number 2. I just wanted to mention because we talked about the first issue because it was a patron pick. The criminals of Gotham are making their way over to Riverdale because they're sick of dealing with Batman, Robin, and Batgirl. And so not knowing much about Riverdale, Batman doesn't want to just go in full guns blazing. So he sends Dick and Barbara in undercover to go to Riverdale High to figure out what's going on because the crime is clearly centered around there. And I'll say this, if Archie and Betty don't end up together and Dick and Barbara don't end up together, I'm perfectly fine with Dick and Betty ending up together. So that's something we can discuss later. Mm-hmm. But you get the cool kids from Gotham moving in, and Archie is smitten with Barbara and Betty is smitten with Dick, and I don't blame them.
Do they wear comical disguises of any kind? Or they just
No, they're just in super 60s outfits.
Darn. Because initially when you said they went undercover, I was like, fake mustache. And then you went high school and I went, probably not.
No, they're just wearing cool 60s clothing. And one of the fun things about this book is that since it takes place in the 60s, there are a lot of 60s fashions happening, which is fun.
Well, that is fun.
Yeah.
I checked out a book here called Crowded, mm-hmm. number one, by Christopher Sabella and artist Rose Stein with Ted Brandt on colors or on inks. Colors. Forget me. I didn't really know what it was. I just saw Christopher Sabella's name, and I've read some stuff that I liked from him before. And I think I had him on the show even once a long time ago.
The name is familiar.
On a Don't Miss long ago. I think he was doing something for Dark Horse. And so I didn't really know what this was, but I kind of liked the art. And let's see. It's kind of a story about a near future dystopia. I read this right after Analog, and it's sort of similar in this world where there's too much apps and there's too many bad things going on, but it's this girl who basically does a lot of what do you call it, like the people who do Uber and the TaskRabbit and like what's that kind of work called, not contract but like gig economy,
the gig economy. Yep,
right. So this girl does all that, like that's her life, and she'll go do a bunch of different things for people. And at the beginning she's meeting this girl from an app called Defend, D-F-E-N-D. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that they save your life. They're a personal bodyguard. And the girl was the only one available, but she also had a very low rating of 1.4.
Not good.
She's super grim. But what had happened is that she's the protagonist, the one who had all the gigs, a hit had been put out on her, a crowdfunded hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that everybody that she knows pledged a total of $1.2 million to whoever could kill her. And so that's why she has to hire this other girl. And it's sort of wacky and it's sort of rompy. And the girl who is the target is annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the other one is grumpy. And it's hyper real. It's sort of silly and cartoony. And I didn't love it, but I did like a lot of things about it.
Did it have anything to say about the gig economy?
I'm not sure what it said yet, because it definitely left, like, there's a lot of unanswered questions. But I think the basic idea is this is changing and it will eventually ruin our world and go out of control just like everything else.
Right.
You know, at the same time, it's very similar to what we used to talk about on Follow, is mm-hmm. that like, I don't want a book that examines social media. I don't want to think about it, you know, or whatever this weird world that we have now. Like, I don't. But if you're going to, you should be interesting. And in that way, this is interesting and pretty modern, perhaps too modern for mm-hmm. me, but really well done, I thought. And I'll read more of it.
Well, that's good.
There's a little something for you.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. If you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, you can join up to support the show. And at any level, you can vote every week to put a book under the rundown. This week, The People's Choice, Pearl number one, from Jinx World, Brian Michael
Bendis.
That was
weird.
Michael Gatos.
It's weird.
Jinx World, now being published by DC. So Bendis and Gatos, longtime collaborators, creators of Jessica Jones, and other books they've done together. I can't think of it at the moment.
Other Jessica Jones spinoffs, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones.
The thing for me is I really like Gatos sometimes. He has two styles. One style, which he uses on Jessica Jones a lot, is where he actually draws everything.
The thick lines.
Or at least it looks like he actually draws everything. Another style is where he's clearly taking a lot of photos and just running them through a filter on Photoshop. And that's the style he uses here, and I don't like that style. I had a real hard time with this book, because I had a hard time looking at it.
Uh-huh.
But I like the story. I couldn't get behind the way it looked.
So, I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I mean, the story was good.
I basically started with it, and it's funny, because a lot of these books that we're reading, the one we just talked about, is it Analog? Analog, which also came out this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's a world that's ours right after ours, sort of, or currently, but like, you know, basically, it's a slightly heightened world where things have changed a little bit. And mm-hmm. actually, this, you know, this could be the world of Deadly Class or something like that. I feel like I haven't read a creator-owned Bendis book in a while that I had any confidence in.
What do you mean? Confidence in what way?
The last few have been super sporadic. Mm-hmm. And like, he'd launch a book and it didn't mean anything. And it was like, and he didn't finish it. And it didn't go very far. And for a guy in his position to sort of not go through the whole thing was kind of weird.
Well, he's going to be relaunching Scarlet here too.
I know. There's fucking four series coming out of this. And I was like, how do you have time for that? And how long can this possibly last? And this, unless they sell a lot, which isn't looking like a thing that's happening because times have changed. That being said, like, this felt like Bendis and it didn't feel like Bendis.
it felt very much like you said, like reading a Bendis creator-owned book, which I hadn't done in a long time. So I thought, yeah. I felt really good about that.
But also just like the world and the themes that seem to be present. Like I was like, wow, this is not the kind of stuff he would have written about 10, 15 years ago. This is a different thing. This is like a lot of stuff because we haven't seen it for a while. Mm-hmm. He's had a lot of stuff bouncing around in there that he's got something to say about.
Yeah.
And I liked that it didn't seem to have anything to do with, you know, powers. It didn't, there wasn't a, I mean, I'm, this might be commercial suicide, but there wasn't like a gimmick. I don't see a straight up movie pitch here. I just, it's some people in interesting circumstances.
Well, so it harkens back to his original comics.
Yeah.
Which were hard-boiled crime books.
Yep.
And that's kind of what this is. This is a young girl caught in the middle of a Yakuza war. And there's something to do with tattoos. She has some amazing tattoo from some legendary tattoo artist on her wrist that causes all the problems. And
this is what happens when you live in Portland for a while.
And so, but she gets caught in the middle, and it really just it seems to be as simple as that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed reading it, and I was like, oh, this guy, I like this guy.
Yeah, that's tough for me. I really did enjoy reading it, but I just didn't enjoy looking at it. There was a flashback sequence of her getting the gun where it's mostly drawn, and I was like, yeah, that's what I want.
I don't know that it bothers me that much.
That's fine.
I see the difference. I absolutely see what you're talking about. I don't know that.
As someone who's made their own Fumetti comic, I would understand.
I understand what you're saying. I like the part that you like better.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't take me out of it at all. And I liked it was funny. The only thing in it that I would say maybe I didn't like so much is that, you know, we were talking about that relationship in the other book with Dan Slott and, mm-hmm. and how he does it. And I was like, this guy and this girl, it's a little. Just a little like old school romantic comedy thing that I don't feel is very applicable anymore. But I'll let it play, and I also want them to get together and be happy.
Did you read the reprint of Citizen Wayne in the back?
I did. And it's funny how, to me, first of all, I know Citizen Kane a lot better than I did at that point when this came out.
Yeah.
So I was just like, yep, okay, this, I know what this is immediately. And I was kind of like, it's cute, but it's kind of disappointing in a way.
Yes. This is, if people don't know, this was Bendis's first and only DC work before his...
I kind of remember when it happened.
Yeah, and before moving over here, it was an Elseworlds story in the back of Batman Chronicles 21. That was, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it was. It's a little short piece in which he riffs on Citizen Kane, it's called Citizen Wayne, and it's the same thing. Bruce Wayne dies as Rosebud. Clark Kent's trying to figure out what Rosebud means. It's, I don't know, it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-page short.
Yeah.
And it could, I could have read more of it.
I think that was enough. It ended, and I was like, that's fine. Like, it was cute, but I was like, there wasn't a lot to say. It was a one-note thing.
Yeah, it's a one-note joke.
It was very strange to me, though, to finish this and flip that last page and see Batman printed. I was like, whoa. It's the same thing I talked
this
about
is Gatos.
With the letter.
Yeah, this is Gatos doing drawing.
Oh yeah, no, totally. I don't mean that. I just mean like literally the Batman logo.
Yeah.
In a Bendis creator-owned book. It was just like I talked about last week, like seeing the wrong letterer under his name. It's weird because it's been such an entrenched part of comic book world, and then seeing like this is Jinx world now, and I thought, oh, that's an interesting choice. And I also, you know, I don't read anything, so to see that he's got 4 creator-owned series coming out, that's crazy.
Cover with his old collaborator David Mack. Scarlet's coming back with Alex Maleev, and United States versus Murder, Inc. number 1 with Michael Avon Oeming, which is interesting.
Murder, Inc. is one of my favorite sort of things to do.
It's an alternate history about the 5 families in Murder, Inc.
So good. I want that a lot.
It's a mob story.
It's Jewish mobsters. Oh, it's great. He'll be perfect. It's going to be so good.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward. That's coming out next month.
Anyway,
so
ratings.
I can't go any higher than 3. I can't. Wow. 3 out of 5.
3.75.
All right, sticking with it.
Yes.
Yeah, I am. I really want to read it, which is tough. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Just settle in, man. Just go for the ride. Let the storytelling and the words take you away. It's going to be all right.
Yep.
So that was from the patrons. There's many wonderful benefits that come from this Patreon thing, mostly for us, but for you also. We have some powers to give away. This week, a little bit of a special situation. We're doing an entire family together. So Michael Corrigan and his three daughters are all going to get a power this week, which is something we've never done before. Now, I should note, the powers are not related to one another. We did not come up with them in concert. They do not work in a...
It's not like a team scenario. They can't team up. Well, they could.
They could. And that's up to them. It's the Fantastic Four powers were not related to each other.
We don't know what the powers are going to be. I haven't talked to Josh, so they could all end up being animal-based powers. And...
It's not a Wonder Twins thing, though,
no.
Where they have to activate with one another.
I don't think so.
So in whatever the freak accident or genetic anomaly was that caused these powers, they all ended up with something unique to themselves, and they'll have to work it that way. So what do we got first?
Okay, Arcadia Corrigan can make her entire body super sticky. She can stick to walls, things can stick to her. But she can also change it so things could fall off. Like she can regulate the level of stickiness.
By area or all at once?
It's all at once. It's all or nothing.
Okay. Okay, so you can't just make your feet sticky.
No.
If you make your feet sticky...
You can walk up a wall, as in this week's book that I read.
Further question. That was in Mage, the Hero Defined.
That's right.
Which is funny. It's a thing that we're reading, but we're not talking about because I think we're both just enjoying it. Like, I'm just going to read it. I don't need to analyze it. I don't know what to say. It's a good time. Keep doing it.
Anyway, yes. Full body stickiness.
Wait. No. So the stickiness itself, is it a secretion?
You mean that if you stick to her, are you going to get all sticky?
Well, what I'm saying is say that she wants to walk up a wall.
Yeah.
But then she gets to the top. She wants to pull back the stickiness.
Right.
Does her clothes have crud on the inside of them?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't leave residue, but it does. Like, she'd have to take off her shoes to walk up the wall, and while that's happening, her clothes are all really stuck to her body because she's super sticky. But once she dials down the stickiness, it returns to normal.
Uh huh.
She doesn't get like covered in like a goo or anything.
Okay. Good. That's gross.
Yeah.
Next up, Fia Corrigan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anytime an insect tries to bite or sting her, it just bursts into flames before it can.
Wait, before it can? Like there's a force field, or like when it tries to make the bite itself, it bursts into flames on her.
Like it makes contact. Like it's about to go for it. I don't know. I'm not an entomologist. I don't know how it works, but before it can break the surface.
Bite. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or inject its goo into you.
I think before the bite. I think in the course of making the bite, it bursts into flames. Like a defense.
Well, I feel like as soon as it gets past the skin layer, it's starting to leave bacteria and stuff like that. It never gets to that point. The body just flames it right up.
I could have used that last week.
The whole of New England could. It would just knock this Lyme epidemic right out of it. Just be over.
Aren't there like super Lyme bugs coming I saw in the news?
That doesn't sound like any kind of story I want to read.
So, super ticks, I think. So, sticky, anti-bug powers.
Yep.
Cecily Corrigan
can
get super bouncy. Cecily can change her innate bounciness to she could be bounced really high. So she almost becomes like a human rubber ball. Bouncing Boy is a Legion superhero. Very similar.
And it's a variable effect.
Yes, much like Arcadia's ability to change her level of stickiness, Cecily can change her level of bounciness.
All of your powers require a rheostat. I love that word.
It's similar to Bouncing Boy. Yes, I just realized that. But however, Cecily can. She doesn't turn into a ball and bounce. Her feet bouncy.
Question.
Can bounce. Yes.
Question.
Yes.
Does it make a comedic sound?
Yes. Mung. Mung.
Mung. So is it more like a, you know, like the playground kickball sound?
Yes.
That sort of hollow metallic bounce?
Yes. Exactly. Or, it makes exactly that noise.
That is the best sound.
Mung. So there you go. She can bounce.
Sort of a rubber ping. Oh, that's a good sound. I don't even like playing kickball, but I love that sound. Michael Corrigan's power is this.
Mm-hmm.
With a thought.
Mm-hmm.
He can cover the cost of any education. So he's walking down the street, points to somebody, college loans are wiped out.
Wow.
They get back the papers from the university of wherever. Kid says, I want to go there. And he's like, taken care of. And it's not a physical thing. It's just that all of a sudden the account shows paid.
It's not like he's putting money into an account or giving that. It's just all of a sudden the record show paid.
Yeah, but then the math works out for everybody. Nobody's getting hosed over here. Mm-hmm. It gets paid for it. This goes further. Like, I really want to take that. I want to take that special class. Mm-hmm. I want to learn how to do, you know, Excel. Oh, it's $150. Yeah, it's taken care of. Like, he's got that. Clown College. So basically, anybody who he wants to help, they can enrich or better themselves in any way that they'd like, and you do not have to worry about the economic consequence.
So it's not like I can get like a Corvette from Michael.
No, unless it's a requirement of a Corvette repair course that you're taking.
Right. Not that I want a Corvette. I just...
Everybody in New Hampshire wants a Corvette. Right. It's the only sports car I see here. Like, it's what you get when you have your mid-late life crisis, I guess.
What color is yours going to be?
I'm not going to get a Corvette.
You sure? There was a little pause there.
Well, I was thinking about what car I would get, and it would definitely not be the one that all of the other people have.
It would give you something to talk about.
And then I thought, would it be a 10th scale thing? Possibly. Or would it just be a bike? I think I would get a camper. So I can leave.
All right.
People.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and help support the show. Thank you to Michael Corgan and family for doing so. And enjoy your powers. Everyone helps us at patreon.com/iFanboy is our favorite people. As you mentioned, you can vote in the patron pick. You can get your superpower. You get a prize pack if you give a certain level. Everyone who does that helps the show going. Our next stretch goal is a non-comics media podcast. So if you want to hear that show, please go and join up. Also, ifanboy.threadless.com is where you can go check out our t-shirts. We actually had a huge influx of t-shirt orders in the last week. All different kinds. Not just Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters, Josh. Almost all the designs got an order this week.
Huh.
Which was unusual because Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters has been dominating. But you can go check out our 7 shirt designs there. If one of the Electro was ordered, Ratings was ordered, iFanboy logo was ordered.
Do you think the fact that we had pointed out that that one was popular caused people to make another choice?
Maybe.
Or is that just a thing I would do?
Possibly. But that's what I was surprised to see and gratified. So thanks to everyone else. Go to ifanboy.threadless.com. You don't have to get a t-shirt. You can get those designs on anything that they sell there. And ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can make a direct donation via PayPal. And ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can go find links to the books we talk about in the Books Below, as well as a general Amazon link. Everyone who helps support the show, we thank you very much. Couldn't do it without you. So I guess we are long. Do you want to do one email?
Let's do one. We didn't do one last week, so pick one.
Let's do this non-comics one. Owen M. I've been thinking about this for a week or so. I'm currently on holiday in Italy, and they take their coffee very seriously here. Following on from your sharing your thoughts on steak and bread, what are your coffee preferences both at home and on the move? Starbucks? Hipster third wave coffee? Cafetiere? Nespresso? Instant?
Now, I'm correct in that you are completely non-coffee.
I don't drink coffee. I drink tea.
In any way?
In any way.
Drink tea.
Yeah.
Now, was this a decision based on, or was he just never started?
No one in my family drinks coffee. Mm-hmm. So there's never been coffee around. No one in my family.
And you've never thought, I'm going to go try a coffee.
No, the other thing is that all I see around me is people who go, I can't function without it.
Right.
I don't want to be beholden to something like that. I don't want to ever be in a position where I can't function without something. So I think I took a sip of it once in college, but never had a coffee. None, it's weird. None of my immediate family, my wife, my most of my friends, it's weird. I found this weird collective of people who don't drink coffee.
My mom drank and made coffee, as did my grandmother. Those are the two people I spent the most time around in adults, like every single day, all the time, my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I think I tried it at some point early on and went, I don't like that.
Yeah, because Ron doesn't drink it, and for the longest time, you didn't either. So that was
That's why this is interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, interesting is variable here. I'm going to be honest with you.
Interesting for me and you.
A good 85% of the people might drop out. I can only be me.
Yeah.
Occasionally, I would try some coffee. I do this with things that I don't like or think I don't like that people really seem to like. You know what I mean? Like, it's like anything. There are people who are like, they just really enjoy that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't like it, I think, well, maybe I'm missing something. Cause like, I know what you're talking about. I don't want that thing. I don't want that dependency. And even mm-hmm. though I do have coffee pretty much every day now, I don't really feel like I have that dependency. Like, it's a nice thing. It's a part of a habit, but I'm like, I can't function. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't work that way. Caffeine's never had a big strong effect on me either way. But like I don't like fish, but every once in a while I'm like, all right, give me a bite of your fish so I can go back in and check. Or like right. I have tons of friends who are super into beer. Like not as like, whoa, let's get loaded on Coors Light, but like try this fucking snobby IPA. IPA is gross, by the way.
Oh, I can't do it.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah. But either way, I try it because I want it. I like this.
You're a man of the world. You want to taste the world.
I like when there's something really good that you can take and go, oh, I understand and enjoy how this is very good, and, you know, more than the normal or you know, whatever is satisfying about it, mm-hmm. the premium aspect of the thing. So for years, I'd try coffee every once in a while. It never really did anything for me. Every once in a while, I'd find myself getting something like a cafe mocha, which is basically, you know, hot chocolate milk with coffee caffeine in it, mm-hmm. more or less, you know, like 400 yeah. calories of just sugar. And I was like, oh, that's all right. At some point around the time that my second son was born, we started making coffee more often. And it wasn't it was related to the fact that like we were like, let's do something else. But it was also just like, let's just do something else in the morning than what we'd been doing. It was kind of like a novelty.
Uh-huh.
But I quickly, like, we had like a regular coffee maker and you'd buy it at Walmart and it's $30 and it makes coffee and it's shitty.
Yeah.
We had that for a while and Lindsay and the coffee that came out of it wasn't very good. And then I got the idea, like, I'd had coffee. It's probably about the time I started working in San Francisco too. So I could get coffee there sometimes and they had really fancy places. And I had to learn how to order it. It was like when I go into a bar, I don't really know how to order drinks or how to be in a bar.
Right.
It was the same coffee. And I don't want to ask questions. I want to be like, well, how does this work? Because I'm fucking 40 and I don't want to be like, I don't know how to do coffee. Right. You know. But I started like just having sort of basic coffee and figuring out how I liked it. And then I came home and I found like – I was like, what's the best coffee that can be made from like just a home coffee machine thing? And it's like a drip pour over kind of thing. Uh-huh. It's a Bonavita machine.
Bonavita.
It's like $200. It's super simple, but it's the only one that's rated by the coffee whatever. And it makes really good coffee. We grind our own beans. We go out, we buy a lot. At first we were buying a lot of flavored stuff, but we've tapered that back. Now I tend to like Colombian or Guatemalan stuff, light medium roast stuff. I don't really like dark roast stuff. And I grind my own beans. Actually, I did drink a lot of Dunkin' Donuts coffee for a little while.
Well, you're in the Northeast.
Yeah, it's hard.
You're in New England. It's basically either that or they burn you out.
But it's not good. Like,
it's not good.
There's something enjoyable about it, but it's not good, if that makes sense. And I tend to not get it if I can. But my coffee at my house is better than coffee I have almost anywhere else other than a couple of super hipster places I went to in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if I go to somebody else's house and like, you want some coffee? The few times I've said, sure, I've been horribly disappointed. Or like those little the pods, you know, you put them in and they're an economic or environmental disaster, the little things.
We have one of those here at work.
Right.
Keurig cups.
Yeah, those are gross. I've never had a good one out of that. But I really like coffee that's pretty good. My next step now is to try to get off of the sugar and cream. Not that I think it adds a lot. I just feel like I bet if I could really like the purity of what the thing is, I'd really enjoy it. But the sugar at the bottom is a wonderful thing.
You're going to be a black man.
I'd like
it. Does not mean how it sounds, but yes.
It took me a second, but I got there. I was like, oh, you don't mean that. Because it's very likely not going to happen.
Right.
Even if I tried to act the part, I don't think it would be.
Have you had iced coffee?
I have. I converted to iced coffee last summer as a thing, and I will enjoy an iced coffee a couple times a week probably. So, like, I'm not addicted to it.
No. Doesn't sound like it.
I don't have to. But it's an enjoyable thing. And also, like, it's a lot less sugar and calorie. Like, I used to drink a lot more soda, and I don't really do that as much anymore.
Right.
So it was a trade for that. And it wasn't even for the caffeine. It's just because I wasn't drinking water all day completely. That had nothing to do with anything, I'm sorry. But, like, I don't mind. I like hipster coffee a lot, and it's always like, oh, that's good. And I like a latte or something like that. I like Starbucks. I don't like their regular blend, but I like – they've got, like, a light roast that's really good that they've been doing. Yeah,
you jumped right in, full throttle.
I was super excited to talk about it. Apparently,
so
I have some right here.
Contact.
I have just to, wait, it's one
yeah,
last bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I bought these like insulated mugs. They hold like 16 ounces, and people are like, I drink 9 cups of coffee. I was like, it takes me 3 hours to drink my 1 cup of coffee.
Well, that's good.
So like, it's like a slow. You know, it's just there. It's enjoyable.
So there you go. Contact@ifanboy.com is the email address. And also, you may note that we are only 3 weeks away from episode 650. And if you're a longtime listener, you know that on the 50s and the zeros, we do an all email show. So If you want to get an email into the 650 episode, please email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Include 650 in the subject line, and we'll be doing that in 3 weeks.
Connor, is it weird that I just checked the patron list,
mm-hmm.
And even though people haven't heard this, subscriptions have dropped drastically.
Wow, amazing. Are they all psychic?
Yeah, I guess.
So,
that's your power.
So check it out, contact@fanboy.com. That's how you can get on this show or on the 650 episode, but send those emails, and we do appreciate getting them.
I'm not going to say the name of who is the August Talksplode, but you are going to get this at the very, very end of this month. If things don't go, if there's some problem, you might get it at the very, very beginning of September, but we're going to get in under the wire. It turns out vacationing really in August really has an effect on getting shows booked in this particular month. The person's work was talked about in this episode. That's the clue I'm going to give you.
Was whether it happened or not.
Hmm? Yeah.
I may have blacked out.
Yeah.
When you start talking, I sometimes start paying attention.
I didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I did? Oh, I did.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes stop paying attention when I start talking.
Oh, I mean, I definitely do that. Or the September Booksplode. Also, you can get a big heads up on it. Is Superman Blue Volume 1. That's right. We're going back to 90s Superman.
Yeah, you're going to need a head start. It's a thick book. Superman Blue Volume 1 is the next Booksplode. It's from the 90s era of Superman. This is the era where Superman was split in two into electric
Jurgens,
Superman.
Wheezy Simonson.
So that'll be our September discussion, our September book club discussion, Booksplode, Superman Blue Volume. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't started it yet, but I'm
really
starting
looking forward
it soon.
To it. This retro period is doing it for me.
Also this week, the Death of Superman podcast will finally come your way. I'm back from vacation. I can finally watch. I've got it sitting on my desk waiting to watch. But it'll probably be about Thursday. You can find me and Paul Montgomery and Ryan Haupt talking about The Death of Superman, the latest DC Universe animated original film. So you can look forward to that this week. Also, wanted to give you your patrons a heads up. We do our monthly hangout. That's where Josh and I and sometimes Ron hang out for an hour a month with the patrons and talk about dumb shit. Not always comics related. Sometimes it is. And it's something I really look forward to every month. This month's hangout date is August 26th, so it's a Sunday, which is pretty much what we're doing now. We wanted to plan the next 2 hours, August 26th, September 16th. And longtime patrons have been waiting for the G.I. Joe fantasy draft discussion, in which the three of us are going to draft our fantasy G.I. Joe platoon. Was going to be in the August show, but we couldn't get that done. It's only going to be two of us on the show this month. So the G.I. Joe fantasy draft is now September. So September 16th is when we're going to do that. So that's going to be really fun. We can talk about G.I. Joe forever.
We could do it right now, but we have to end this show.
Yeah. I'm really excited for this fantasy draft.
I know you are. And in fact, I think that possibly some of your and Ron's excitement might make up for a shortfall in mine. But I think once we get going...
No. Once we get going, you roll down that hill just like we do.
I know. That's what I just said.
Firefighters are fighting fires.
I really feel like I need to like bone up, and I feel like it's too big of a thing to do.
Well, that's why I'm happy. I'm actually kind of happy we're pushing it off, because I would like another month to do some research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I am the next part here,
yes.
Which would be head over. I was literally thinking about barbecue. I didn't get distracted by the, I was thinking about the G.I. Joe character barbecue and hoping that you would keep talking so I could. So you can leave that pause, because that is what happened. Head over to ifanboy.com to find out about all of our podcasts.
It's going to be a good hangout.
Before the show comes on. By liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following @ifanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually, J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram as well.
I also wanted to mention that in the 450 episode, this 450, wow, that was years ago. In the episode 650, as we do, we'll be live streaming the recording. So make your plans. Even though I haven't told you the date of it, keep that in the back of your mind. There'll be a live stream of that episode.
Save all the dates.
Yeah, just save everything. Just don't do anything for the next 3 weeks. Where are we in the script? Oh, yeah. If you'd like the show, write a review on iTunes. You know, leave a star rating if you don't want to write a review. It's very easy to just click over to the show in iTunes and click on a star rating. It helps people find podcasts. The more reviews, the better. The more star ratings, the better. And we really do appreciate it. It's an easy way to help the show. Even better than that is to tell your friends who are into the same things, into comics or even into long coffee talk. You must have friends into that. You know who else is into long coffee talk? Your mom.
Linda Richman.
So she is. Coffee Talk and Barbara. So if you have, if your mom's in a Coffee Talk and or Barbara Streisand, tell her about this episode. She might want to hear.
Maybe
about
that
Josh's.
Coffee bit is going to be the thing that finally gets your mom on board.
Yeah, maybe she want to hear about Josh's thoughts on light roast. Is that a thing?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. Say hello to your mother when you're doing it. She wants to hear from you. Call her. Give her a call.
Say hello to your mother for me, okay?
Help us spread the iFanboy love or coffee.
It was like 3 Saturday Night Live jokes there.
The most important comedy show of all time. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. No big whoop.